nothing but gowns.
I'm going to call this meeting of the Elections Committee to order. Welcome, everybody. A quorum is present right now. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the January 4th meeting. Is there a member who would like to move approval of the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Vice Chair Greenman has moved approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we have approved the minutes. The first bill on the agenda is House File 110, Representative Kraft's bill. So I will move that House File 110 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Welcome to the committee, Representative Kraft. It's an honor to be hosting your first bill committee hearing.
Thank you.
I expect 2 million views on TikTok as a result of this hearing. Representative Torkelson, you have a question.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just first wondering what the plan is for today. What's going to happen to these bills?
Yes, well, I've already motioned for House File 110 to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The motion on House File 28 will be to re-refer it to the Public Safety and Finance Committee. Does that answer your question?
So you intend to...
I intend to do so.
So there is no commitment to bipartisan support of election bills. Is that my understanding?
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. I would love to have you vote in favor of these bills. I think they're great bills, and doing so would make it bipartisan.
Okay, we got that much figured out.
I know that has been a requirement that a couple previous governors have imposed. It's not the practice of the legislature in recent memory. So I know when Speaker Dowd was Speaker, there were election bills that passed with only GOP support. Certainly there were examples of DFL election bills passing through the House in previous years as well. So, I mean, I would love to get bipartisan support. I've appreciated working with you so far. You've been very receptive at meetings that we've had previously. Hope to have a productive relationship, hope to earn your support on these bills. I'm not going to impose any kind of rigid rule regarding that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, even the current governor has publicly stated that he supports bipartisan action on election bills. I could play the tape if you'd like, but...
Okay, I haven't heard that. Maybe after the hearing you can play the tape for me and we can...
I'll be happy to. I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. And the other question I have is... The reasoning for this to move so quickly. We have, about a third of our body is newly elected. They are really just getting their feet on the ground. I haven't even had a chance to meet with the Secretary of State yet to get more background on these particular issues. I don't really understand the reasoning behind moving these particular bills so quickly. You know, we had great action on our first bill on the floor on a bill that needed to move quickly. Getting tax compliance done was a great service to the citizens of Minnesota. Moving these bills so quickly is, in my mind, actually a disservice to the citizens of Minnesota who haven't had a chance to really examine these issues and get a good understanding of the impact of these changes as we move forward.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. We did have an overview from the Secretary of State last week. I've met with him a couple times as soon as I found out I was chairing this committee. I'd certainly encourage you to do so. He has a lot of information. He'll be speaking on the bills here today as well, so we will get his input on those bills. Other committees have already passed bills along. This is a committee that meets one time a week, so, I am eager to get things done. I know the DFL majority certainly is as well. Other committees have passed bills out on their first hearing. Several committees have already passed out very meaningful pieces of legislation, and I certainly think we are a meaningful committee as well.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's obvious you're eager to get things done. I'm eager to do things well, Mr. Chair. And just a couple of housekeeping things. First, we don't have our normal researcher here because she's out, so we have Ryan Wiskirchen with us today filling in research. And as you, I think, know, we're going to have a change in the membership of the Republican members of the committee. I don't know if that has become official yet. Can you let us know maybe have, you want to make an announcement in that regard?
Yes, thank you. That is one thing I neglected to mention, so I appreciate you doing that. And I, our regular committee legislative assistant, Mike Hermanson, is also here today, so introduce him. But yes, I think the change is official. Well, you will see Representative Quam is sitting here, and Representative O'Driscoll, you are here as well.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if I'm a member of the committee or not, but if you'll allow me to speak, I would like to do that.
Sure, you're welcome to stick around.
We didn't know for sure if that change had been officially submitted and made by the speaker at this point, so we are both here to be able to make sure that the minority view is represented today, so we know, regardless of who is on here, that we've got it covered.
Okay. We will try to verify. We did receive notice from Representative Quam's legislative assistant yesterday that he is being appointed to the committee. So if I can get word whether it's
Mr.
official.
Republicans would like to have a full slate, if it's Representative Quam or if it's myself, to be able to vote on these matters. So.
Sure. Okay, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm fine with being allowed to speak and ask questions, but until I see an official thing from the speaker, I think it's appropriate that I not vote and that the vote be with Representative O'Driscoll.
Yeah. Sure, we will try to have that confirmed, but now that I'm thinking about it, the action might need to occur on the House floor, which I suspect means it probably is not official yet, but we will get confirmation on that, in which case Representative O'Driscoll will be the voting member for today. But you're both welcome to ask questions.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. One other question, if I might.
Sure, Representative O'Driscoll.
Is there another available packet of information that I could take, or do you want me just to use one of the other members who's not present today, or?
Yeah. I know the materials are on the cart. You're welcome to pick them up from there. I don't know that we have an extra member packet every week. This is kind of an unusual situation with a membership swap in the middle of after a committee's already met once. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Altendorf will not be here today. I don't know if she was able to get a hold of the CA to let him know that she is out ill. I got an email this morning. So Representative O'Driscoll could certainly use her packet of information.
That would be fine. Thank you for that notice, and I appreciate Representative Altendorf's commitment to public health practices. So, okay, are we good? Okay, thank you. Representative Pratt, so I have moved House File 110 to be re-referred to the House Committee on Ways and Means. To your bill, Representative Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am so excited to be before you this morning and to be carrying House File 110, voter pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds. I want to acknowledge as a new member that I'm standing on the shoulders of several people who have carried this bill in the past, including Representative Ryer, Representative Olgamott, and several years ago, Representative Erdahl. I think this is a great bill because of the values that it celebrates. That our democracy works best when more people of every generation, race, gender, background, and political persuasion participate. That encouraging young people to build a relationship with the political process as early as possible helps make voting a lifelong habit. In the words of Representative Olgamott, this will set them up to be lifelong participants in our democracy. And that with young people, it's their future that we often debate, and we're all better when they participate more in it. So why is this something that we should do in Minnesota? Well, first, let's talk about voter turnout. Most students likely turn 18 during their senior year in high school, which is typically a time of transition in their lives. Intuitively, it should be easier to establish a new habit, meaning voting, if youth are thinking of themselves as voters before this time of transition. The data actually proves this. There are studies that have shown that there is an increase in voter turnout in the 18 to 29 age bracket as a result of youth pre-registration, and that increase ranges from 2 to 9% depending on the studies that you look at. And in Minnesota, while we do a great job on voter turnout, young people is an area where we can improve. So specifically, if you look back to the past two midterm and the presidential election, in the 2018 election, according to Minnesota Compass, there was 45% turnout in the 18 to 34 age group, 66% for ages 35 to 64, and 79% for those over 65. So that's a 19 to 34% turnout gap from young people to those older age groups. In the 2020 election, there was a 70% turnout in the 18 to 34 age group, 80% for ages 35 to 64, and 84% for those over 65. That's a 10 to 14% turnout gap. Now, next, it's easy for us to do this because we already do it. Today, we allow 17-year-olds to pre-register if they're going to be 18 by the time of the next general election. And we do this already in a way that protects their data. It means that the cost will be minimal. We do have a fiscal note that's $17K. Lastly, many other states already do this. A total of 15 states plus Washington, D.C. already allow 16 and 17-year-olds to pre-register. And these are both Republican and Democratic-leaning states, including states such as Florida, Louisiana, North Carolina, and Utah. So with that, I have a number of testifiers. I'd like to start by inviting Secretary of State Steve Simon to tell you more, followed by several youth testifiers who will share their stories. And then we look forward to answering any questions you may have, and then I will ask for your support of House File 110 voter pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. Secretary Simon, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And just for members' sake, we will hear from all the testifiers first, and then there will be time for member questions, and anyone can be called back. So welcome to the committee, Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you, Representative Kraft. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. It's an honor to be with you today. This is an idea that's been kicking around for a long time in the legislature. It's long overdue. It's broadly bipartisan. As you heard, its longtime previous author was Representative Erdahl. I had the privilege to work closely with him on this legislation. I think so much of what Representative Kraft said was spot on, and I'll just be supplying one or two exclamation points. This is broadly bipartisan, not only in the legislature, but has been broadly bipartisan in the country as well. Several other states have implemented this. And as Representative Kraft said, this really is about getting good habits started early. There's no question about it that when young people think of themselves as voters, even before they are officially voters, they are much more likely to vote that first time that they're eligible to vote at 18, 19, 20, and so forth. And if they do that, if they vote in that first election in which they're eligible, no matter what that age is for them, they are much more likely to make that a lifelong habit. As Representative Kraft mentioned, there are actual studies out there showing that this legislation really moves the needle. This is not theoretical. This is not happy talk. This is not symbolism. This is actual studies that show in state after state, red states and blue states, it really does move the needle. It really does have an impact. So it's an idea whose time has come. I just want to flesh out a little bit more what Representative Kraft rightly said about what we already do right now. We already have the programming in place because we do have a law on the books right now as we speak that says 17-year-olds who will be 18 by the time of the next election, that's how the statute phrases it, the next election, can already do this. The problem is that's really impossibly vague. If for no other reason than to just clean up the statute books and provide more clarity, this bill makes sense. Because what does the next election mean? Does that mean a primary election? Does that mean a special election? Does that mean a March township election? There's been some confusion out there. So for no other reason, cleaning up the books to make sure that we mean to measure not by the next election, but by the age of the person involved, 16 and 17-year-olds. So thank you for your time and attention. Thank you, Representative Kraft, for your leadership on this issue. And I'm happy to be in support of this bill, as I have been for many years. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Secretary Simon. So I have a few testifiers. We've asked all testifiers to keep to 2 minutes. So we will, if it gets to about 2 minutes, I will give a hopefully gentle reminder that time is approaching. So just bear that in mind. The testifiers I have the first testifier I have is Isaac Israel. Please come up, Isaac Israel. And after Isaac will be Kales Campbell. So Kales, if you could get ready to come up after Isaac, that would be great. So welcome to the committee. Isaac Israel, please identify yourself for the record first and then proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Isaac Israel. I am a 17-year-old senior at St. Louis Park High School. This past fall, I led a voter registration drive at my high school. So we started in summer, talking with administration and figuring out all the loops to jump through. And our goal was to register as many eligible seniors or any eligible students as possible to vote. We began the drive with a kickoff assembly in our auditorium, which was available to all school members. And there was just a ton of energy about voting and about getting involved in our democracy. And that was not just for seniors. That was freshmen, sophomores, juniors. There was so much energy throughout all grade levels. And so as I noticed this, and I at the time, I'm still 17. I still cannot register to vote. But I noticed that there was so much energy in getting involved, and there was little that most students could do to sort of, begin to get involved in our democracy. People would ask me, what can I do to get involved? And I said, well, you can go volunteer, you can go, do all these things. But what pre-registration does is it builds a habit of voting. And so I think that it's incredibly important. And I would just ask you all to support House File 110 for voter pre-registration. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Kales Campbell, and after Kales Campbell will be John Runningen. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself first and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kales Campbell, and it is my distinct honor to be here to offer testimony in favor of House File 110, which proposes to grant 16 and 17-year-olds the ability to pre-register to vote. As a young individual, I'm cognizant of the significance of being engaged in the democratic process and having a voice in the decisions that shape our collective future. Throughout my involvement in various campaigns and grassroots movements, I have sought to mobilize and encourage individuals both within my community and on my college campus at Concordia University to assert their right to vote. In my estimation, by extending the opportunity for pre-registration to 16 and 17-year-olds, we can empower the next generation to partake in the shaping of our nation's future. By the time these individuals turn 18, they'll already be registered voters and will possess a more robust understanding of the voting process, leading to a more knowledgeable and informed electorate. Allow me to highlight three key points. The earlier an individual is exposed to the concept of voting and participating in elections, the more likely they are to continue to do so throughout their life, resulting in a lifelong participation in our democracy. Allowing 16 and 17-year-olds to pre-register also increases youth voter turnout on Election Day, leading to a more representative electorate. Several states such as California, Oregon, and Vermont have adopted legislation that permits pre-registration upon reaching the age of 18. The adoption of House File 110 aligns our state with these progressive measures and represents a pragmatic solution that can be easily integrated into our current processes. It is incumbent upon us as a society to invest in our youth and provide them the means to make their voices heard through pre-registration. Encouraging young people to start thinking about voting before they reach the age of 18 equips them with the knowledge and understanding required to make informed decisions at the ballot box. I implore the committee to give favorable consideration to House File 110 and afford the youth of our state the ability to pre-register to vote. The ability to pre-register is not only a right, but also a responsibility. It is a way of investing in the future of our democracy by empowering the next generation of citizens with the knowledge and skills they need to participate in the political process. By granting 16 and 17-year-olds the ability to pre-register,
wrap up your testimony.
Okay. We can increase civic engagement and voter participation among young people and ensure that their voices are heard in the decisions that shape our shared future. The time to act is now. Let's give young people the opportunity to shape the future they will inherit. Let's pass House File 110 and make Minnesota a leader in youth civic engagement. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is John Runningen. Please come to the testifying table, and after John Runningen will be Dan Thomas Cummins. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Runningen. I am president of LEADA Men. LEADA Men is College Students Connected for Change. Lita Men represents 100,000 community and technical college students throughout Minnesota. I am here to speak in favor of House File 110 because I believe it will help young people register to vote. Over the last several years, Lita Men has registered over 10,000 students to vote as part of a program to grow voters in Minnesota. Lita Men seeks to make voting a habit in young people through a long-term approach in providing civic education, creating civic agency, and tearing down institutional barriers that prevent students from voting. This legislation will tear down one of the barriers that we see voter registration process for first-time voters. Former Justice Sandra Day O'Connor said, "Knowledge about the ideas embodied in the Constitution and in the ways in which it shapes our lives is not passed down from generation to generation through the gene pool. It must be learned anew each generation. Allowing for pre-registration creates an opportunity for high schools to teach students to be engaged citizens. As a student at Kennedy Secondary School in Fergus Falls, Minnesota, I learned the ABCs of democracy. I, like many of my classmates, I checked out sometimes. The content did not feel relevant to me. I didn't really care about who was running or what major topics were being brought up to be voted on because I had to wait until I was 18 to really feel like I was an adequate member of our democracy. It wasn't until I was 18 that I was understanding how the system works and just how important all of our involvement was. At that point in my life, I didn't have teachers there to help me out, and like many others, had to learn on my own. I believe that allowing 16 and 17-year-olds the opportunity to register to vote helps to by providing an on-ramp for our students to become engaged citizens. They will also have the opportunity to have the support of their teachers to help them understand what it means to be civically engaged. Finally, this will give the students a chance to experience what they are learning in the classroom instead of waiting for the opportunity to apply it after they have left. We all know that democracy is not a spectator sport.
Please wrap up your time.
Absolutely. And this legislation will help actively engage more young people in our democracy, and that is something we can all get behind.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Dan Thomas Cummins, and after Dan Thomas Cummins will be Dane Smith. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As the chair said, my name is Dan Thomas Cummins. I was one of the folks who brought forward this bill back in 2015 to Secretary Simon, as well as my own local legislators at the time, Representative Halverson and Jim Carlson, and then also Dean Erdahl at that time. This bill actually came out of Youth and Government, which the conference I met here last weekend, where I introduced it, and it passed with flying colors through the Senate. It didn't quite make it in the House because we ran out of time, so it's just like the regular legislature. The biggest point, though, is that I want to underline a few pieces that were previously said, which was that it is a broadly bipartisan proposal. In plenty of states, it has been passed with overwhelming majorities in both houses of legislature. In Florida, it passed the House unanimously with only two votes in opposition in the Senate. And in North Carolina, it passed with only nine votes in opposition across the legislature. The other piece was that we also saw in North Carolina, where they do have party registration, that with 150,000 or so people who registered, pre-registered, over the course of 3 years, the majority of them, in fact, registered as independents. So that's an interesting statistic there in terms of the impact of this law on partisanship in the state. The other figure is that in Minnesota, we know that when people are registered when they're 18, they're much more likely to vote. The 18 to 24 demographic turned out to vote with 69.2% in 2020, versus of that same group who are registered, the figure jumps to 93.7%. So if we're interested in seeing more youth voter turnout in the state, this is an easy proposal that makes a ton of sense. It's a very easy change, and it helps clear up all the other confusion that has been noted by the Secretary of State and other activists here. So thank you for your time, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I hope you'll support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The final testifier is Dane Smith. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dane Smith. I'm here today representing Clean Elections Minnesota. It's a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. Our mission is to ensure maximum voter participation, and we also support reforms that reduce the influence of wealthy donors and special interests in our political process. We also strongly support urge your support of HF 110. We currently allow 16-year-olds to get behind the wheel of a car, work full-time, register as organ donors, and donate blood. They certainly are old enough to ready themselves for participating in our system of self-government. Many people across the political spectrum in recent years have lamented the decline of civics education in our schools. And we think that this is one step that would accelerate learning and civic involvement among the young people who will soon be part of our electorate. As has been stated before, many states have already enacted this legislation. We know of no significant problems involving fraud or abuse. A fiscal note shows that it's a minimal cost. And if any time, as Secretary Simon pointed out, the additional time to screen and filter this information should make it easier for counties to complete registration before the age of eligibility. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Dean Smith. Those are all the testifiers who have signed up, so we will turn that, and before we proceed, we did get confirmation of Representative Quam. You are officially not yet on the committee, so you're not able to vote, but you're welcome to ask questions. And it looks like you have one, so we'll turn to members of the committee and Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things as was hinted at, more time for verification. So can we get confirmation that these registrations will be run through the normal HAVA requirements and the verification with the Social Security Administration website?
Representative Kraft, are you able, would you like to take that, or I can also ask our House research staff if you prefer.
Chair Freiberg, Representative Quam, thanks for the question. If you'd like to take that, I can also ask the Secretary of State to come up and respond to that.
Sure. That's probably a better idea than
or someone from his staff.
Okay, we have a staff person.
Yep.
So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and respond to the question.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Nicole Freeman, Government Relations Director, Office of Secretary of State. Just wanted to note that I have full confidence in Matt Gearing. He would know he would hear. But jokes aside, yes, those any pre-registrations similar to what happens today with 17-year-olds who pre-register, as they are becoming live records, they will go through the normal verification processes through DVS verification or Social Security verification. They'll get their postal verification card mailed out to them. All those normal processes will happen as they become registered voters.
Representative Quam, any follow-up?
Well, offline, I'd like to understand what additional verification of the HAVA sites, because back when after the audit and it came visible, I queried, and both Secretary of State and the counties indicated they didn't go back and see why, you know, tens of thousands of registrations were bad, and they didn't have any data on that. So it'd be, you know, they can hit that offline. But I would like to, before this hits the floor, I think it'd be useful to see the states that have implemented this, how, you know, the few elections before and elections since, how that's impacted the percentage of participation in the voting for the 18-year-old group. I think that kind of information would help. We've got so many new members. That would be pretty useful, and it'd show you just how much of an impact this bill would make.
Sure. I'm sure Representative Kraft can get that information for you before it hits the floor. Representative Stevenson.
thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have some questions that are probably also suited for the Secretary of State's office. Excuse me, related to Section 5 of the bill, which has to do with the public information list. So in Section 5, I see it says that data on applicants submitted pursuant to the section are not on the public information list until the voter is registered or has voting history. And I'm interested in this because that list is how campaigns, but also other groups, know who they should be talking to, who will be voting in the upcoming election, who's eligible to be voting. And it might be a campaign saying, you know, we want to communicate to you about our message. It might be a public interest group saying we want to help you get to the polls, things of that nature. And if I'm reading this correctly, it says for people who are pre-registered, they're not going to appear on this list
basically until they turn 18 or actually vote. So if you have a October 20th birthday or October 31st, 18th birthday, you're not going to be on the list until, you know, a couple weeks before the election. I think if I'm reading this correctly, and I'm hoping the Secretary of State's office can confirm it, this would be a little bit different than how we treat people who pre-register already who are going to turn 18 before Election Day, because it says there's no such exception currently. You can register to vote if you're going to be 18 by Election Day. So my question is, if you're going to turn 18 under existing law, if you're going to turn 18 before Election Day, is your name on the list at the moment that you pre-register, or do you get is that held privately until your 18th birthday or until you vote consistent with this?
Nicole Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and Representative. Currently, and as would stay the same under this bill, members of our residents in Minnesota who pre-register are held in pended status until they turn 18 and are then registered or are then eligible to be a registered voter. And so currently under state law, only active registered voters are available on the public information list.
Representative Stevenson, any follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I wasn't in the room when the motion was made. Is this bill being re-referred or is it going to the general register?
It's being re-referred to Ways and Means.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair and to the author, you might think about this particular issue and whether it makes sense that those names hit the public list at an earlier point than, you know, Election Day or when they turn 18. It seems to me that if you had something where anyone who's going to be eligible to vote in an election, their name is on the list as of Labor Day, for example, would give campaigns and not-for-profit groups, entities that are interested in the election, the opportunity to communicate with those voters in advance of an election in which they are eligible to participate. And I think that would be helpful. I certainly agree that we shouldn't be putting 16-year-olds' names on lists for campaigns to contact, but if a voter is going to be able to vote in the election and they're going to be registered to vote, it's probably better that we don't get that, you know, within a week of Election Day, hypothetically speaking. So that would just something to think about. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to follow up on Representative Stevenson's question, I was thinking along those lines, but not the exact same lane of traffic, if you will, that he was. And my question is, based on the current 17 years of age to register, they automatically move to the voter roll. I get that. But if you're not eligible possibly for two election cycles or a two-year period of time because you're 16, what assurances do we have of a firewall that those names don't get introduced into the voter rolls and show up in the poll books, and we have persons who are not of legal age eligible to vote?
Representative Kraft, it looks like Nicole Freeman's able to answer too. So, but Representative
Kraft. Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, thanks for the question. Representative O'Driscoll, excuse me. I'll turn that over to
Nicole Freeman.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. So currently, any voter who is under 18 is set into a pending queue, and so it's based on their date of birth and the current date. And so as someone, you know, if your birthday was today, there's a back-end process. I'm not an IT person, so excuse me if I'm not using the right words, but there's a back-end process that runs daily to catch the people who have turned 18. And then switches them from a pended voter to an active voter, and then, as I said earlier, runs them through all of the checks that someone who is above 18 would go through as they're registering.
Representative O'Driscoll, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. Along that same line, what assurance, well, I should ask this, maybe to the bill author or to whoever can answer this question. What documentation will someone at age 16 have available to them to bring forward to pre-register?
Nicole Freeman.
Sure. So currently, there's many different forms of documentation, as you know, to register to vote. So that person could use, if they had a driver's license, they could use their driver's license number. They could use the last four of their social. There are also folks, and it's allowed under state statute, that if you don't have either of those numbers, you can use other forms of documentation to register. If someone was to complete the form online, they'd be signing the attestation or completing the form in paper at a voter registration drive. They'd be signing an attestation. And then again, once they are, it would go through the basic checks of other eligibility information when it's initially entered. And then as they turn 18, that postal verification card would verify they live where they say they live. And then it would be, again, run through those checks. So it would look for a match in the DVS database. And if there was Social Security information inputted, it would be sent off to the Social Security Administration, too.
Final follow-up?
That would be fine, Mr. Chair.
We have two members on the list after you.
Yep. So my question is, if someone age 16 or 17 fraudulently presents themselves as a person who would be eligible to vote, what repercussions would there be under the proposed law for someone who, again, is not eligible to vote because perhaps they're a foreign exchange student or they may be someone whose family is here on a work visa or the like? And as some of the testifiers had indicated, there's drives that go on in the high schools to try to get individuals to vote. What mechanisms do we have in place and what would the penalties be for those individuals who might fraudulently at age 16 or 17 and maybe even not at their, you know, not consciously, just because, hey, my friends are doing it, you should do it too. How do we deal with those kinds of individuals?
Nicole Freeman.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I would say that there's the current statute that would prohibit fraudulently registering or fraudulently completing a government form would apply in this situation as well. And then additionally, these folks are pended. They are not on a registered voter list. They would not be eligible to register at a poll because they're not 18. If a county, again, the county auditors are the keeper of the voter record, so it's possible that if they noticed something, they would bring it through their usual process with their county attorney for investigation. And then again, that once they turned 18 and it went through those checks, similar to an older voter who was seeking to register, that would be flagged at that time.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment in regard to the proposal from Representative Stevenson regarding getting these these teenagers on a list where they can be contacted. You heard Secretary Simon express how much challenging that is to identify which election qualifies them for. Is it general? Is it a local election? You know, how would you set that date? Could be a real problem, and certainly should be. I'm not trying to help you, really, Representative, but just pointing out that there may be a problem with that, and I want you to think about it.
Thank you for the comment, Representative Torkelson. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, going back to Representative O'Driscoll's point, I mean, I'll kind of take it this way. Unintended consequences, you know, 16 years old, you register to vote, and you just miss the part where you're not supposed to vote, but you get a hold of a mail-in ballot and you vote. Again, unintended. They were thinking that they could legally vote. What do we do then?
Nicole Freeman.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. In Minnesota, every vote is tied to every ballot is tied to a registered voter, whether you get it in person on Election Day or by mail, whether you're a mail ballot precinct or you register and request for an absentee ballot. And so if a ballot appeared for someone or somebody was requesting a ballot who wasn't currently registered, that would be caught in the fact that they would be giving their date of birth on a new voter registration form, and their date of birth would not be election day, and so they wouldn't be eligible. Again, I think it would either be caught at the polling location where they wouldn't be eligible to register to vote, not eligible to vote there. They wouldn't be on the polling place roster, and so they'd be directed to the election day registration table, where they would find, oh, you're 16, you're not eligible to vote. And so in a similar way to if you showed up at the wrong polling place, you'd be given the correct information as to your situation. And so they'd either be told you're not eligible to vote currently and sent home, or if they did apply for an absentee ballot, their application would be denied because they wouldn't be 18, so they wouldn't be eligible to even apply.
Okay. Final comment, Representative Davis, and so then I turn to Representative Kraft for closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's no way they're going to get their hands on a mail-in ballot.
Nicole Freeman?
They would not get their hands on a mail-in ballot that would be mailed to them from a county, no.
Representative Kraft, any closing remarks?
Yes. I hope we can all agree that it's really a good thing when more young people participate in our democracy, regardless of their political persuasion. As I think you've heard today from testifiers, as well as from the support from the Secretary of State's office, that this is a fantastic and incredibly cost-effective way to make that happen. Again, because we already do it, it's simple to do, it works, and I'm looking forward to sharing that data in increasing turnout of young people, and it's being done in both Republican and Democratic-leaning states around the country. So I urge all of your support of HF 110, voter pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds. And let's send a clear message that we want and encourage young people to be lifelong participants in our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I renew the motion that House File 110 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. With that, the motion carries. Congratulations, Representative Kraft. Your bill is on your way, on its way. The next bill on the agenda is House File 28. Representative Frazier, could you please come forward? So I will move House File 28 be recommended to be re-referred to the Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Frazier. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, lead committee members. I'm here today to present House File 28. House File 28 will restore the right to vote back to individuals that have been convicted of a felony but are no longer incarcerated. This bill has been around for quite some time now, and it has had bipartisan support in the past. It goes back multiple years. It has been carried by former House member Keith Ellison, former House member Bobby Joe Champion, who is now a leader on this bill in the Senate, and it has been carried by former House member Ray Dean, who will be here to testify as well today. The cornerstone of our democracy is the right to vote. That right allows for an individual to participate in the process of electing representatives and weighing in on critical ballot questions that impact their daily lives. Currently, there are over 50,000 Minnesotans who are living throughout our state that are on probation or parole. These are mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, sisters, brothers, and our neighbors who are living in the community, working to provide for their families, paying their taxes, and contributing to our state. They are people that have valuable insights and have proximity to the most pressing issues in their communities throughout Minnesota. Yet, because of a conviction in their past, these individuals are still denied the fundamental right to vote. We should seek responses to crime that do not simply punish, but also rehabilitate, heal, and restore. We must ask ourselves, if disenfranchising offenders, after the justice system has concluded that they should be back working in the community and rebuilding their lives, serves any positive criminal justice outcome. Restoring voting rights to those convicted of a felony crime but no longer incarcerated is one of the ways to help facilitate reintegration into our communities by giving these individuals their voices back to participate in the electoral process. We have a representative democracy, but currently in our state, our government cannot truly be reflective and representative of all its people if certain voices continue to be shut out of the process. It is well past time to correct this. House File 28 will correct this issue. With that, Mr. Chair, I will yield to testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. We have several people who have signed up to testify. First on the list will be Wintana Melikan. After Wintana Melikan will be Dr. Chris Uggen. Wintana Melikan, please come forward. As in the previous case, all testifiers have been asked to keep their remarks to 2 minutes, and there may be a reminder if they go over that. And then we will have member questions after testimony has concluded. So, welcome to the committee, Wintana Melikan. Please identify yourself first for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Hello. Hi, everybody. My name is Wintana Melikan, a St. Paul resident. All right, go ahead and get started. Like the representative said, this piece of legislation has been around for many years. I actually began working on it in 2012. It was the first piece of legislation I had ever worked on. But moving beyond that, in 2018, I opened up my very first business. I opened up a restaurant. And when opening that restaurant, I wanted to close on Election Day. I wanted to give my staff the opportunity to go out and participate in society, participate in their civic duty. And every single one of my employees actually did not have the right to vote. As we know, many folks in the server industry have a are folks that come from, you know, our justice system, and it's often the only profession that they can get access to. All of my staffers were very hardworking, great citizens that were doing amazing work in the world and doing amazing work for me, and I couldn't even give them the ability to have the day off because they specifically asked to work. They said that they didn't want to take the day off. They wanted to be somewhere because everyone was walking around with red stickers that they could not have access to. I actually then ended up selling that restaurant. My family has since then opened seven different restaurants across the state of Minnesota, everywhere from Rochester, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and almost exclusively, majority of our staff are made up of folks who just don't have the right to vote because of these laws. Because of our massively long probation periods in our state, they have pretty much caused folks, mostly in rural Minnesota and in the Twin Cities, to not have access to the ballot, and it makes Election Day feel like a punishment, even though they've completely served their time. They're workers, they're producing taxable income for us, but yet they don't have the simple ability of participating in society as a full citizen. And so I'm really here as a business owner and as a former policy organizer to ask all of you to support this legislation. I think it greatly impacts our state to have...
Please, conclude your testimony. You can say one or two more sentences.
Yeah, it's a massive loss to our state to have folks that pay taxes every single day but not have representation, especially those that we know have done reentry and have done the right thing. And so I just encourage all of you that care about business, that care about economics, that care about fair taxes and representation and equity to support this legislation. Thank you,
Wintana Melikan. Next, Dr. Chris Uggen, please come forward. After Dr. Uggen will be Ray Dean. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Eugen. I'm a University of Minnesota professor of sociology, law, and public affairs, author of a book on disenfranchisement, and I speak in favor of the bill today. Since 2016, 8 states have similarly restored the vote to non-incarcerated populations. So Minnesota now ranks among the more restrictive states. The reasons for this change involve racial justice, the importance of voting as a fundamental right, and its benefits to individual and society. As a criminologist, I see voting as consistent and aligned with the goals of community supervision. Reenfranchisement, in short, would extend democracy and civil rights to about 46,000 Minnesotans, by my count, reduce racial disparity in ballot access, so that disparities in punishment do not echo outward to dilute the votes of communities of color. And I say that currently about 6% of Black and American Indian Minnesotans are disenfranchised.
a rate over five times the white rate. It would also respond to public sentiment, as public opinion generally favors reenfranchisement for non-incarcerated populations. It would accord with international standards. No other nation has a general disenfranchisement provision for non-incarcerated individuals. It would enhance public safety, supporting the reintegrative goals of community supervision. And it would reduce confusion about eligibility and potential prosecution for unlawful voting for people who are otherwise doing quite well on probation and supervised release. Finally, it's fair that people on probation are currently disenfranchised for far longer than people incarcerated, often for much more serious crimes. So thank you for your attention to my work and to the social science research on this question.
Thank you, Dr. Ugin. Next will be former Elections Chair Ray Dean. Welcome back to the committee, Ray Dean. And after Ray Dean will be Willie Lloyd. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning to everyone, committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to what is such a critical, I think, piece of legislation that's been around for quite some time. This matters to me in many ways, having carried the bill for four terms, but beyond that, one in four people in America have a criminal record. And nearly all of us have broken the law or committed a crime. We just didn't get caught. So that's an important thing that when we consider what this means. My conviction came in 1976 when I was convicted for a felony burglary. I served 7 months. I was released early from my probation, and I thought I had lost my right to vote forever. And I would venture to guess if you polled 20 people that are out that had been convicted, that are even off probation, at least 19 of them would say they've lost their right to vote forever. So I applied for a pardon in 1981 and did receive a pardon. When House File 28 signed into law, roughly 50,000 people in Minnesota will be able to vote. And these are people that the Department of Corrections and the judicial system have deemed safe and not a threat to society. Long probationary periods in Minnesota are real. You all know them. You've been talking about probationary periods for the past few sessions. A reminder, most people vote where they live. And so if they live in a district that's red, they tend to vote red. If they live in a district that's blue, they tend to vote blue. Roughly half of the people that we're talking about live outside of Ramsey and Hennepin County. Majority research shows that this pro-civic engagement enhances public safety. It's time for Minnesota to pass this. Currently, two states and D.C. allow people to vote while they are currently incarcerated. 21 states allow people to vote when released or under supervision, out working in society, and seven other states allow partial voting. Just rather quickly, I carried the bill in 2014. It had bipartisan support. I've had bipartisan support every time I had the bill, and I think it's time for Minnesota to join states like Indiana, Utah, and North Dakota to allow those out in public to participate in democracy and vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray Dean. Next on the list is Willie Lloyd, and please come to the testifying table. And after Willie Lloyd will be Zeke Caliguri. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Willie Lloyd. Good morning, Chairman and distinguished members of the committee. I am honored to have the opportunity to talk to you about HF 28 and how the absence of such a bill has adversely impacted my life. I sit here before you as someone who has been formally impacted by the criminal justice system. But in spite of that, I've been an American my whole life. And just like some of you, I'm a spouse, a husband, a proud father of a 14-year-old daughter. And like some of you, I'm a businessman, a homeowner, a mentor, philanthropist, and I just so happen to be fortunate to work in the most noblest profession, and that is of a teacher. I've been teaching now for over 12 years. Over 5,000 students have came through my classroom. I am a leader in my community. But unlike you, I don't have a voice. Unlike you, I've been made to feel like a second-class American because I can't vote. I humbly request and ask that you bring your full weight and might behind HF 28, because as we all know, in America, there's nothing more un-American than taxation without representation. Thank you.
Thank you, Willie Lloyd. Next on the list is Zeke Caliguri, and after Zeke Caliguri will be Secretary of State Steve Simon. Welcome to the committee. When you are seated, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Zeke Caliguri. I do community outreach with Minnesota Justice Research Center. I am also homecoming after a long period of time incarcerated myself. And like Mr. Lloyd, I too am an American and have been an American my entire life. Last fall, I worked with a constituency of formerly incarcerated men and women who organized a campaign to register people to vote, to get people out to the ballots in a nonpartisan effort to get as many re-enfranchised, formerly felony convicted individuals to the polls. In 2015, I was a part of a letter-writing campaign that supported this bill. I was currently incarcerated at the time. Even in 2016, I was a part of another organizing situation to register our family members to vote. What those campaigns taught me was that it reinforced what I already knew, was that the people in those places, the people coming out of those places, they care about their vote, and they care about their community. They care about what happens in these communities. You'd be surprised to understand how civically engaged some of the members of those communities are, and likely they are watching today. We lived in some particularly inhumane environments, and out of it, I'm proud to say that I maintained and recognized my own humanity as well as the humanity of other people in those places during that time. Did not allow it to destroy us. Instead, what we have now is a responsible community that are teachers, that are engineers and welders and electricians, but are also artists and are also heavily engaged in these sorts of matters.
Please conclude your testimony in 1 or 2 seconds.
Absolutely. What we are coming to is that this isn't a moral matter. It's a matter of humanity, and it's a matter of reinvesting in the humanity of people coming out who believe in this and believe in the process. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Secretary of State Steve Simon, and after Secretary Simon will be Elliot Howard. Welcome back to the committee, Secretary Simon. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. I want to thank Representative Frazier for his leadership. As he said, he stands on the shoulders of many, including Representative Dean. It was great to see him, and he has a compelling personal story. It is time, members, to restore the right to vote to those who have left prison behind. Keep in mind who exactly we're talking about, these tens of thousands of Minnesotans. These are folks who someone, a judge, a jury, someone has determined is good enough, safe enough, worthy enough, a sound enough risk to be among us every day, putting their lives together, working, raising families, integrating back into the community. And I want to assure you, as I hope the personal stories have convinced you, this is not an act of charity towards these tens of thousands of Minnesotans. This is very much in everyone's interest, all of our interests, yours, your constituents, because we know that people who come back into the community after being incarcerated are far less likely to reoffend if they feel some sense of ownership, some sense of investment in the community. And this is surely among the very biggest forms of ownership and investment. There are many compelling personal stories which supersede anything I could say here today. But let me just say one historical note, Mr. Chair, that's worth noting, I think, for the record. At the time of Minnesota statehood, there were fewer than 75 felonies on the books in Minnesota law. Now there are over 350 felonies on the books in Minnesota law. And the unmistakable trend over many decades has been to tilt sentences in favor of the probationary part of the sentence. So you have the perverse and, I would say, unjust situation where you have people who serve 1 or 2 years in prison. They are on probation or supervised release for decades and sometimes can't vote for decades. That makes no sense. It's time that we join states like North Dakota, like Iowa, like Florida, like Indiana, in making sure that we restore the right to vote for those who have already left prison behind and served their time. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Secretary Simon. Next on the list is Elliot Howard, and after Elliot Howard will be Carly Stark. Welcome to the committee, Elliot Howard. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Elliot Howard, and thank you for this opportunity. H.R. 28 will ensure that Minnesotans released from prison, having served their time, are welcomed home, not only as family and neighbors, but as citizens. Citizens who possess the right to vote, which, as the representative said earlier, is the cornerstone of our democracy. 8 years ago, I sat with a dozen members of my congregation in the church lounge, huddled around a cell phone. On speakerphone were inmates from Lino Lakes Prison. We at the church wanted to know about this legislation, and we wanted the opportunity, and were blessed to have it, to ask those men how this legislation would benefit them once released from prison. And of course, being the dutiful church folk we were, we prepared our questions, we asked them, we took our notes. It was a succinct question and answer period on the topic of restore the vote. It ended in 15 minutes. At that point, participants on either side of the call could have ended the conversation. And I am still today, 8 years later, thankful that no one did. For what followed from there was not a formal churchy kind of meeting or a quasi-research interview, but a conversation. A conversation among kindred spirits. At both ends of the phone were people who shared honest struggles, their own honest struggles, on both ends of the conversation about finding a better path for themselves and finding a little more light to see by. At both ends of the conversation were people who were working on themselves, and as Zeke had indicated in his testimony, were also working for the public good.
Please conclude your testimony in one or two sentences.
All right. I want to just say that the voting rights restoration for us as people of faith is a real way to put bones, to bring breath into elements of our faith, the lexicon of faith. And I'll close with this. Restoration, renewal, reconciliation, repair, return, yes, responsibility. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next on the list is Carly Stark. Please come down. And then after Carly Stark will be Naomi Gaines Young. Welcome to the committee, Carly Stark. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carly Stark. I am the executive director of the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections Act Counties, known as MACAC. I had to take a breath before I said the name of my organization. We provide probation for around 3/4 of the cases in Minnesota. It's a county-based probation system. I'm also the public safety policy analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. This is not, elections is not usually in my policy area, so you have a letter that includes Matt Hilgart, who is the expert on the elections side. So I'll mostly be speaking to the correction side of this. We support the restoration of voting rights to individuals that have been convicted of a felony once they have completed their term of incarceration. Our current system is confusing, which makes it difficult for both people on probation and elections officials to administer. House File 28 would make the law easier to understand and eliminate the administrative complexities of the current system. The bill would make the analysis simple. If you are incarcerated in a correctional facility, you cannot vote. If you are in the community, you can. Investigation, prosecution, probation, and other services related to enforcing ineligible voting is expensive and burdensome for agencies that are tasked with enforcing it. This bill would eliminate the need for investigation by local law enforcement of those who have unknowingly registered to vote or voted before their rights were restored. Speaking from the community supervision perspective, MAC Act believes that allowing probation clients to vote when in the community encourages active engagement in the community and supports pro-social activities, both of which have been shown through corrections research to increase the likelihood of success on probation. And when people succeed on probation, that means they leave the criminal justice system, they have jobs, they live in the communities, and they become a part of the community, which reduces crime and ultimately protects victims long term.
Please conclude your testimony in 1 or 2 sentences.
Yeah, I only had one sentence left. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Frazier, for authoring this bill. And on behalf of our organizations, we ask that you support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Carly Stark referenced a letter. It is in your agenda packet along with several others. I would encourage you members to take a look at those, and members of the public, those are available on the committee website as well. Next on the list is Naomi Gaines Young, and after Naomi Gaines Young will be Ryan Hamilton. Naomi Gaines Young, when you get to the table, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Naomi Gaines Young. I am an organizer and post-release support specialist for Minnesota Freedom Fund and a formerly incarcerated individual. I want to echo the words earlier of Representative both Frazier and Kraft, who echoed that we are all better when we participate in the political process. But let me tell you else what is also called upon us to do, to have a responsibility, to lend our voice, to improve the conditions in our communities, to feel part of something greater than myself, and it also says I belong. It is extremely rare in Minnesota that sentences are given without life, without parole. So most of the people you have in your prisons are coming out. They're getting out. And why not tap into that political power of the individuals coming out? But here's the more important reason, and this was also echoed earlier, is that when someone feels a part of the community, when they feel they belong, when they feel they have a say in what goes on, they are firmly planted in that community. They don't return to prison. If they're given the right, the just ability to prove themselves and that they can make a meaningful contribution to the community. So let's start by restoring this vote. That is the beginning of this process. And later we can work on the other civil rights that are currently being denied to individuals, such as housing. If you have a criminal history, you cannot live somewhere. Just this week, me and my husband were denied housing because of my criminal record. My husband doesn't have a criminal record. I do. But yet we can't, even though I've improved my life, even though I remain law abiding, even though I am more financially independent to elevate in my life, I cannot do so because of my criminal history. But the beginning of this process can start with restoring the vote of people who are newly released from custody. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Ryan Hamilton. Please come down, Ryan Hamilton, and after Ryan Hamilton will be Dane Smith. Welcome to the committee. When you've seated yourself, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Freiberg and members of the committee, good morning. I'm Ryan Hamilton, Government Relations Associate for the Minnesota Catholic Conference. The Minnesota Catholic Conference is proud to be a part of the Restore the Vote Coalition and would like to express our support for Rep. Frazier's House File 28. Pope Francis has said, Where there is no mercy, there is no justice. The Catholic Church has consistently advocated for responses to crime that do not simply punish, but rehabilitate and restore. We must ask whether disenfranchising felons, after the courts have allowed them to return to their families and communities, serves any positive criminal justice purpose, or is it merely punishment for punishment's sake? There is no doubt that justice-involved individuals face significant collateral consequences once they leave prison. The inability to vote and have a say in the public decisions that affect their families is just another stumbling block for those trying to reconcile themselves to their communities. The restoration of voting rights is a critical step in giving people legitimate chances to forge new paths in their lives. Catholics believe that every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. Offering a second chance to justice-involved individuals, as Secretary of State Simon said, it serves the common good of all Minnesotans. Please vote aye on this unfavorable passage of House File 28. Thank you, Rep. Frazier, for your leadership on this issue.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Dane Smith, and after Dane Smith will be Munira Muhammad. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself once again and proceed with your testimony.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Again, my name is Dane Smith, and I'm here today representing Clean Elections Minnesota. One of our primary missions is to ensure maximum voter participation. We strongly urge members to support House File 28, welcoming these estimated 50,000 Minnesotans back into our democracy and society, and restoring their sacred civil rights is the right thing to do for them, but also for us. Studies show that restoring civil rights helps reduce recidivism and thus improves public safety. These folks work, as many have pointed out, pay taxes, raise families, and they worship, just as we do. Restoring their rights restores their dignity, hastens their return to productive and rewarding lives, and making them whole again will make our community stronger. I'd like also to point out that at least more than 20 states recognize these benefits and already extend this right. We think it's important to note the bipartisanship reflected in these 22 states. The list includes red states such as North Dakota, Montana, Utah, Indiana, Ohio, blue states such as California and New York, and purple or swing states such as Nevada, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Support for this provision also comes from many, perhaps dozens of Minnesota nonpartisan and nonprofit organizations, and many, many, perhaps scores of churches and religious denominations. Together, they far outnumber nonpartisan nonprofits that oppose the measure. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Our final testifier is Munira Muhammad. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and members of the committee. My name is Munira Muhammad. I am the policy associate for the ACLU Minnesota. That's the American Civil Liberties Union, a longstanding organization devoted to protecting our individual civil liberties and civil rights enshrined in our Constitution. I'm going to echo what a lot of people have said here, so I'm going to be very brief. We're here to speak in support of House File 28 regarding the restoration of civil rights. It's clear that our ability to choose our government is fundamental to our democracy. But today we have a situation where thousands of Minnesotans who live in our communities, work, raise families, pay taxes, are barred from the most basic of civic engagement, voting. 55,000 Minnesotans have been released from prison are still denied the right to vote. This is made even more egregious when we take into consideration Minnesota's history and pattern of trapping individuals in decades-long probation and supervision sentences. It's an incredible travesty that finishing your prison sentence and becoming part of the community isn't enough to show that one has paid their due to society. In fact, the state continues to punish those who've been into prison with massive disenfranchisement. If the goal is to truly rehabilitate people and have them become part of society again, then they need to have a voice and the ability to fully participate in civic life. The ACLU of Minnesota has advocated on voting restoration for many years now in the Capitol and in the courts. As you'll know, we have ongoing lawsuit on this and in the community. We are grateful to this committee for hearing this bill and hope the legislature will continue to work towards protecting Minnesota's rights rights and the right of people to vote in all circumstances. We urge you to pass House File 28. Thank you to the chair and members.
Thank you for your testimony. So thank you. Member, it's time for a member discussion. Is there any? Representative Torkelson, then Representative Ekbadjic. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd love to ask a question of Representative Dean. I just think he should come down.
Former Representative Dean, could you please return to the testimony? Representative Torkelson, proceed with your question.
Well, he may not be able to answer this question, but I just wanted to welcome him back to the legislature. It's been a while. So.
We all.
You know, I would like to explore a little bit the differences between Minnesota when it comes to sentences and the use of probation compared to other states. Representative Dean, do you have any information along those lines?
Ray Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, that has not been my area of study, but Minnesota is typically a state that uses long sentences of probation beyond what other states do. And one of the reasons I think this is critical, and I know that in the legislature these past few years, you've been talking a bit about probationary sentences and what happens. Studies have shown that if any recidivism happens when someone's out on supervision or under probation, it usually happens within the first 3 years. So what that means is someone that has a 20-year probation, they're not likely to reoffend because if they were going to, it generally would have happened within those first few years. So I think that the thought has always been Minnesota has a fairly low incarceration rate, one of the lowest in the country, but it has the highest probationary rate. So we use things a little different than other states do.
Representative Torkelson, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I use the term representative because my understanding is that we refer to someone by the highest office they have reached, and while I fully understand that Representative Dean is no longer an active representative, I choose to honor him with the title in spite of that. You did point out that Minnesota, while we're certainly on the high end when it comes to the utilization of probation and the length of probationary and supervision, we are also on the low end when it comes to incarceration. This is something I haven't had a chance to explore, but I believe there are felons who, while convicted of a felony, never go to prison. Am I understanding that correctly? And how will they be treated? Perhaps this is a question for the author, but either of you could enlighten me on this.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Torkelson, I will definitely defer to the author of the bill.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you for the question, Representative Torkelson. Yes, there are individuals that may be convicted of a felony and never actually end up incarcerated. The way this would work with those individuals is that the moment that they are convicted or they take a plea deal and they are given a sentence for their conviction of the felony, if they are not incarcerated, they would have the ability, they would be eligible to vote.
Representative Torkelson,
thank you,
final
Chair.
Follow-up, I'd like to get to as many member questions as possible.
I understand. So if someone is not sentenced to prison but is given a probation and they then violate probation, what happens to their voting rights in that case?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Torkelson, if they violate that probation and then they are then incarcerated, they will lose that right to vote.
Representative Ekbadjic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier, for bringing this bill. It's great to see so many members of the community out here supporting this. I just want to continue to reiterate my support for this bill. So many members of our community have served their time, and when they're out, they are participating in our society, and the right to vote just makes them want to participate more and want to be stronger members in our community. And so I continue to applaud these efforts. I think if I had a question, it would just be if you could explain a little bit further, Representative Frazier, the educational aspect about this, once people receive their right to vote, how the corrections systems will inform people, and what other education programs will be available to let people know that their right has been restored.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Baji, for the question and for those supportive words. The way the bill was laid out is that the correctional facility or the lead of the correctional facility will have to provide information to the individual once they are departing the incarcerated state that they have their voting rights restored. They're also to supply them with a voter registration application so they can get the process started to register to vote. We're also requiring the Secretary of State to gather information, informative information, to provide to the courts and to those correctional facilities, informing them of what the rights are of those individuals once they leave the incarcerated state.
Thank you. Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any questions, but I really just want to say that I am, as a new member of this body, I'm really proud that this is one of the first bills that I'm going to get to vote out of committee. This is right morally. My wife grew up at a Lutheran church camp in rural southern Minnesota and reminded me that this concept has its roots in biblical values. But it's also right from a policy perspective. As many folks have noted, folks who are released from incarceration are far, far less likely to recommit if they are given ownership over their community, if they are full-fledged members of the community. And right now, these are folks who pay taxes. They pay sales taxes, income taxes, Social Security taxes, gas taxes, and yet they are not entitled to that full member of that full measure, excuse me, of citizenship. And I guess that just does not sit well with me. And I think that it's something that is just going to be a positive benefit for the entire state. And the final thing I would mention, and there were comments made earlier about proposals from this committee being sort of bipartisan. And I guess I would just sort of ask a general question, what our definition of bipartisan really is. As has been noted, this would put us on the same platform as such notable blue and progressive bastions as Indiana, Louisiana, Montana, North Carolina, North Dakota, Ohio, and Utah. And more locally, I know that this bill from my previous work has also been championed by now former Senator Dan Hall, who, those of you who know him, would hardly mistake him as a liberal socialist. And I think, you know, the question is, what does it mean to be bipartisan? Does it mean that it's supported by everyone in this committee and in the full House and the legislature, or does it mean something broader? Does it mean that regardless of political persuasion, this is something that folks can get behind and that folks can support? And I think we have ample evidence that that is absolutely the case. So I'm again really, really proud to be supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. There was an error on our, we missed a testifier, so with members' indulgence, this testifier came up from Red Wing, so I'm going to invite her to come down to speak. So I apologize for that. Is there a Vicki Lampert here? Okay, sure. If you could keep your remarks to 2 minutes, we can go maybe a couple minutes over. I do have two members left on the question, so I apologize for bypassing you there. But please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Vicki Lampert, and I'm from Red Wing. And I'm a deacon in the Episcopal Church, and I appreciate this opportunity. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak. I grew up in a rural community and have lived in Red Wing for more than 2 decades. I'm an educator and served the state of Minnesota as a teacher in the Department of Corrections for 17 years. I come to you today to testify for Restore the Vote. My faith has grounded me in the reality that every single human is a beloved child of God. They are worthy of dignity, respect, and having their voice heard and valued in our democracy. And I believe that Minnesota can live into this idea. People who have experienced incarceration deserve to experience restoration and redemption in our society. Restoring their rights of citizenship restores them of their voice and dignity. Restored people restore communities. You heard that earlier. Minnesota, as you know, disenfranchises over 50,000 people of our beloved neighbors by preventing them from voting until they get off paper. And this disproportionately impacts Minnesotans of color. And you have already heard from several formerly incarcerated persons. I've seen hundreds of boys and men stripped of their dignity in prison. They're often victims of trauma in an unforgiving world. And I noticed how they felt so discouraged that they still felt unworthy and disenfranchised because they were not allowed to operate as full citizens once their time of incarceration was served. In my own family, I have seen the negative impact on extended probation. My own family has indicated a disgust with this system, which has intentionally excluded him from participating, as well as the other negative impacts that he's experienced, such as difficulties renting and finding employment.
Please conclude your testimony in one or two sentences.
We have a responsibility to fulfill the most basic promise of our democracy. And I haven't heard the state of Maine, which has never restricted voting rights from anyone, regardless of their incarceration. Now is the time, ladies and gentlemen, to restore voting rights for all of these over 50,000 Minnesotans. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. So with that, we'll revert to member questions. I have Representative Greenman and then Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier, for bringing this bill, and Representative Dean and the folks who have worked on this. And I just want to say I will save my questions for later, but thank you for being here. We heard from a testifier that what this is about is a responsibility to participate, to make communities better, and a saying that you belong. You belong here. Your voices belong here. They belong here at the center of our policymaking process, at the center of our political process. And so I just want to really appreciate all the work that's gone into doing this, the Restore the Vote Coalition, and know that it is, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning on a very slippery Wednesday, and there's a reason that this hearing room is full. And so I just want to thank you and thank all of you for being here, participating, and believing in our democracy that we can bend the arc. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I was confused by some semantics and a previous testifier who said that when they're released from incarceration, they're released from criminal justice system. I always thought, and I think the government, budgeting, et cetera, consider probation officers and the people that are handling the release as still part of the criminal justice system. I thought that there are also some other rights that were lost when you're on probation, some rights of freedom, you know, and some of the search criteria is loosened so that if you're on probation, they don't need a warrant to, you know, search your car or, you know, other, and it'd be nice to understand what different rights or lessened rights are present when you're on probation. So it'd be nice maybe if staff could give that to the people. I'd also, through this discussion, I would like to find out what people are thinking of, what serious crimes really aren't, you know, they're trivial, so they shouldn't be a felony. If probation is long, why aren't we looking at addressing that, because I think that's a broader impact on people. So, you know, it mainly go to the people that have been testifying and the people outside groups that have sent the letters, because if the system is, you know, so broke and we're such an outlier, we really should be, you know, looking at those questions and addressing. But frankly, I was surprised. I thought there was a, you know, we heard plea deal. I thought there was a discrepancy and disparity in the people that get the probation instead of incarceration. The people that maybe have a shorter sentence and get probation because they don't have a good lawyer, they're not connected, And I thought there were people who were being disenfranchised by, the sentencing and, being in incarceration. But apparently, that's not an issue in Minnesota, because if it still is, we're not addressing that. We're furthering the disparity that the, poor, unconnected people from certain groups are suffering in the sentencing, and you're sort of rubbing their face in it by saying, well, you're spending your time in jail instead of on probation, so, we aren't caring about you. We are focused on the connected people that got the plea deals, the special consideration, and we're going to give them, back the right to vote, even though they haven't finished their sentence. But it's just because their sentence isn't incarceration in prison. It's the special plea deal they got because they could afford a good lawyer. So we are maybe not addressing the actual root cause of a problem. We're just doing some window dressing, and then we're actually, I fear, looking at widening the disparity in treatment of certain citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Huang. In terms of other rights that are taken away during the period of probation, this bill is being referred to the Public Safety Committee, so that seems like an appropriate discussion to occur there. We are a few minutes past our time, so I'll turn it to Representative Frazier. If you have any response to Representative Quam's comments, you're welcome to make them, and then you can proceed to your closing remarks as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Quam, for your comments. Public safety is the place to have that conversation. And your comments have, I will say, encouraged me, because if I'm hearing you say you want to work on criminal justice reform to ensure that we eliminate some of the disparities that we have, I will happily work on you with that. And if we can consider that to be bipartisan, let's do that in a bipartisan manner and get that done. But today we're here to talk about restoring the voting rights to individuals that are no longer incarcerated. And as we heard from testimony today from our faith community leaders, from individuals that have been impacted by our criminal justice system in a disproportionate manner, we know how important this is. And I couldn't close better than what was said by the individual that came down from Whitwing to testify. What she said was, restored people restore communities. That is what this is about, restoring individuals so they can continue to pour the good back into their communities, back into their families, and stay engaged. That is the most important thing, and that is something that we should be engaged on here and very, very supportive behind and united behind that. So I'm hoping to get everyone's vote in this committee as we move this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 28 be re-referred to the Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. With that, the motion carries. The bill is referred. Thank you to everyone who drove here on as Representative Greenman put, a slippery Wednesday morning. I appreciate you taking your life in your own hands. Thank you to members for a good discussion. With that, we are adjourned.